We're going to start. Hi.
Yeah, no time to catch up.
Okay.
Welcome to the film experience. We haven't done a podcast in, since, I don't know, Everything Everywhere All at Once was climbing the charts. It's been a while. let's try to get back on the horse. It's Oscar nomination day, Oscar nomination evening now, and we've had some time to think about this morning's events. I know everybody wants to talk about Barbie, but I don't want to start at such an obvious place. So what I want to start by throwing out the single nomination factor of both Colman Domingo and Danielle Brooks. It's so uncommon now to manage that without your film being like a hot ticket in other categories, which didn't used to be for acting, but it is now. So were you guys happy about that? Have thoughts? I'm here with Eric Bloom and Chris James. And I am Nathaniel Rogers, and I should have said that at the jump since people haven't heard from me in so long.
I think people still remember you, Nathaniel. Hi, everyone. It's Chris James. I will say, it's always really nice to see a larger number of movies getting attention. So even though, Rustin and Color Purple aren't exactly my favorites, they are really, really strong performances, and I'm really happy to see them spreading the wealth. And even though it's two nominations, I would kind of put NIAID in that same category of would I have chosen it? No, but it's nice to see them choosing something a little bit different outside of the expected Best Picture 10 and all the people in it.
Yeah, it's Eric. I'm going to do a hot take right off the bat, which is, and I talked to Nathaniel about this a little bit via email, but I think Danielle Brooks is bad in The Color Purple. I think the acting is full on bad. She's a great actress. She's wonderful. I love her, but I think, and it's not her fault. I think that director brought her to play just super cliched, obvious beats. She kind of plays in like two modes, right? Like I'm sassy and my soul's broken. And she kind of just has that. There's nothing that character feel. In fact, to me, it kind of made me realize like how great Oprah is in it, that the Oprah version of that character feels like has so many like weird rough edges, and she feels kind of like truly dangerous, and where Danielle Brooks just felt like she was like saying lines sassily.
Well, yeah, I have to object to this. Maybe it's because, though, that I saw her on Broadway. Do
Yeah, I
this on
did
Broadway.
too.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's like this. Maybe perhaps it's a left afterglow because I thought she was sensational on stage, and I was so excited when she got the same part in the movie. And so maybe my enthusiasm for that carried over, but I loved her in it.
Interesting. I love musical theater. I'm a huge musical theater person. And to me, Danielle Brooks's acting in the film version of Color Purple is the kind of acting that people who hate musical theater think musical theater actors are doing all the time when the great ones are not doing that. It was just so like one note and big and like on the money and very on the nose, unsubtle. And I think The Color Purple is a bad movie. I think everybody's kind of bad in it, not their fault. But I think, and maybe we can move into this. To me, that supporting actors category is today's tragedy. Not to start on a bad note, but personally, I think those like I to me like Jodie and Devine in there totally meritus. Those performances will look great 20 years later when we do the supporting actors SmackDown. And the other three, to me, it's not that they're bad. They're not. I mean, I think Danielle Brooks is bad, but like Emily Blunt has nothing to do. She's super boring. And I think, I don't know how you nominate America Ferrera and don't nominate Margot Robbie, but take it, boys.
I mean, I don't agree with Danielle Brooks being bad, but what you were saying about her, I would extrapolate to the rest of the Color Purple movie. So I don't, she wouldn't necessarily make my top five, but I agree with you that it's one of the weaker supporting categories in recent memories. And Emily Blunt, I wouldn't consider boring only because her only trait is being in the smack dab corner of the frame, swishing a martini and trying to divert your eyes somewhere, somehow. It does make me sad on, I think, the more interesting performances that were left out, even if they were maybe a little bit more long shot by the time we got to nominations. Like, I loved what Julianne Moore is doing in May, December. I think it's this fully original character. And if we're kind of talking about like stealing a movie from the cast around you, I think that's exactly what Rosamund Pike does in Saltburn, a movie that I don't love fully, but love everything that she's doing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on our reactions, I know Nathaniel put a gag order on love for Rachel McAdams, but just want to put that out there. That
well, let me clarify why. Okay, so I love Rachel McAdams in Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And if I had my choice, she would be in the category. But we had already, like, when I put the FYC post up and I asked people, it was like five different people wanted to talk about her. And I'm like, but we have to talk about other things too. So yes, I agree that she's sensational in that movie. That's an example of taking sort of like a stock character and just imbuing it with so much, like, I don't want to say star quality, but like, just feels so authentic, even though it shouldn't maybe feel that good.
And you feel like that character has life off the page because of the performance, you know?
And that's always one of my tests for like, is somebody really elevating the material, is if I can imagine the movie's over and like they're still existing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if they're only just existing for real within it is great. But yeah. I think she does that. But Chris, you have to stop making me fall in love with you, because I agree with all of your words. And this would have been so much more an interesting category with Julianne and Penelope in here. And I just don't know how you watch those movies and vote for those other people. Not, and I love those other people. It just is, it's a super lame category. Again, SmackDown 20 years from now, whoever does it is going to be like, what were they thinking that year?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I was thinking about the SmackDown when it was announced, because I was like, oh, yeah, this is how it happens, because there's so many of those past years where the same thing is true. You're like, wait, it was this? I'm trying to think of, why is the name escaping me? Oh, it'll come to me. She had like three movies in one year, and
Jessica Chastain.
No, it was like the 50s.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. It's an actress people love that Annette Bening had a biopic of.
Thelma Ritter,
Gloria
maybe.
Graham?
She was
Gloria Graham?
Every year.
Gloria Graham. Yeah. Gloria Graham. So, like, the year where she won the Oscar. It's like this nothing performance. I mean, she's fun in the movie, but she's in it for, like, 10 minutes. And it's just, like, you know, like a fun, like, little, like, tossed off part, and she's in two other movies that year in supporting roles, and she's sensational in them. and yet that's the movie that they decided to honor her for, because, you know, it had other nominations, so they were watching it. So it's like this, all of these stories that we go through every year are like eternal stories, really. Yeah.
I have a question for you, Nathaniel, kind of as we're on the supporting categories. It kind of just dawned on me right now. Are we in a year without category fraud, or a year with very minimal category fraud in the supporting categories? It's nice to see, for the most part, supporting performances recognized.
That is I'm so used to it now that I have a higher tolerance for it than I once did, even though I don't really like that. And yeah, you're right. Because there's, like, I've heard people feel that Ryan Gosling or Robert De Niro are leads in their movie, but I don't really agree with that. Because I don't think, I think it's different. An antagonist is different than a lead. And also, you know, a lot of screen time doesn't ever mean that you are the story. So yeah, I agree. I don't think we have any category fraud. I mean, we had people attempting it. I would call Julianne Moore a lead in May, December. Sorry. I just think that's a three lead movie. Like, it just doesn't exist. Like, people say, oh, it's about Natalie Portman. I'm like, it's not. It's about Julianne Moore and Charles Martin. It's just Melton. It's just that Natalie Portman has the biggest part. And yet I wouldn't call her supporting either because she has the biggest part.
Oh, j'accuse on that. But, but okay, it's interesting, right? And it just shows you sort of how ultimately subjective this is. Obviously, I think the closest category fraud thing, timing-wise, is probably Jodie Foster, right? I mean, she's in an hour of the movie and very close. But again, it's never about her. In fact, there's a long scene about how it's never about her.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would like to, just on a happy note, personally, just celebrate that Jodie Foster is back as an Oscar nominee. First time in 29 years since Nell, the much hated
Nell.
She's
so good in Nell, though.
She's so great in it. She's great in Nell. She's great. And
we say that Emma Stone might be taking bits and pieces of Nell in Poor Things.
That's awesome. But I do think, like, I think Jodie's, like, one of the greats, really. I really do. And when she soars, she really soars. And it was just so great to see her back in something real. And she's just so good at knowing when to push that Hollywood lead confidence that she has and how to modulate it. And it's just such a smartly judged performance, I think.
I agree. I mean, I'm not sure she'd be my five. I'm still debating about my top five because I haven't done my own awards yet. And this category, and the reason we're talking about it being a tragedy, is that there's so many great people that it's like, who do you choose? So, I loved her in Nyad. And it was like a really strange experience for me because I am a huge Annette Bening fan and I didn't really enjoy her performance. So that was like hard for me to watch that movie. And then very surprising for me that this was the movie that brought her back because 20th Century Women was sitting right there and she should have won the Oscar and couldn't even get nominated. So it's just like, it's these eternal stories that play out all the time. It's such a mystery what catches on and what doesn't in some ways.
If only Doris Dia was a real life person with chapped lips and a really horrible backstory, then maybe she would have gotten in.
But yeah, I agree. Well, Eric, your point about Jodie Foster being such a confident movie star, which is funny because she's been away for so long and that confidence is so. It's not like if you Rusty Rust in her case, like she just innately has that. But that brings me to Margot Robbie, who I didn't want to start with. But I think, to me, that's the tragic snub of the day because I think it's just impossible what she accomplished in that movie. It's such a high wire act of movie star acting. So when you talk about somebody who has just that innate like ability to hold the frame and like she's doing so many things in that movie and she makes it look so effortless, it reminded me of like, well, it's not secret, but I think Barbie's a musical. And it reminded me a lot of like people like Gene Kelly or whatever, who could just like hold the frame and just have this joy. Just the movie just exudes it. That movie would be impossible without her. And there are so many other actors who, you know, they're good, like you're saying, but it's just like, is this something people are going to care about in 10 years, this performance? You know, and I think that's important to think about. So I am very sad she didn't make it.
Absolutely. I am as well. That was my biggest shocker of the morning. And it is interesting, like, as you're listening to all the nominations come out and going over it after, you try and look for narratives of what did the Academy like and dislike, what's their overall feeling of a movie. And it's so strange in the Barbie case where it's getting so many nominations, including ones that I didn't expect, like America Ferrera, that it seems poised to be on this great trajectory that just comes crashing down with the Margot snub and then the Greta Gerwig and director I think it does. It's a perfect encapsulation of America Ferrera's speech. When you make things look easy, people expect that of you and expect higher. And if they see you sweat, then they don't think you're doing a good job. And I just think she accomplished something so effortless, and in doing so, kind of gets the Amy Adams and Arrival slot. But it is really, it's really sad for just a really unique performance that does so many like specific cool things of being comedic while also being like deeply soulful and taking us on this really unique arc that ends in such a different place than I was expecting.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll do thirdsies on that just to say that, I mean, Margot Robbie has the consolation of still being the most beautiful woman in the world. So she's going to be okay. But I agree. She kind of turns on a dime in scenes sometimes where she's like, it's broad, but then like super specific. And to your point, like really sort of like comic and then like deeply soulful is the perfect word that you use, Chris. And it is, it's a major accomplishment. She has no right looking like that and being that great an actress. It really is crazy. She is like some gift from the gods to movie lovers, in my opinion. And this was a fantastic performance that she'll always be remembered for at the end of her great career. It's silly that they boned that for Annette Bening, who I also love, but not as much in Naiad. Like Jodie was the performance in that movie to me.
And that's the strange thing, was why I brought up my disconnect about Naiad, is because like I much prefer Annette Bening in general to Jodie Foster. So it was a surprise to feel the opposite way during that movie. Were there any other categories that you guys had reactions to, like, this is not what I was expecting? Because I will just throw mine out there. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but international film. Like, I was, maybe it's because I hadn't seen, you know, a few of them. I haven't, you know, been as active this year, but I was just not, it just did not go the way I was expecting at all. And there's something about it, and it's possible just because I haven't seen all of them that's why, but it just feels like a little flat to me. But I also think that might be because Anatomy of a Fall was not submitted and probably would have been ruled ineligible because there's a lot of English in it. But that would have been such an exciting match, Anatomy versus Zone of Interest. And you know they both would have been, you know, competing for the win. So, and now it's just like Zone of Interest in a cakewalk. Don't you think?
I don't think that there's too much competition for the win. I always enjoy seeing what happens in international and documentary feature, also just like with the shortlist, because you sometimes get some odd movies that pop up in the nomination process that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. I'll confess, I haven't seen Io Capitano or Perfect Days, the first of the former, which I don't think anyone had really predicted. So I'm excited to see that film, but Society of the Snow was sort of a technical marvel that was a shrug of a movie for me, and Teacher's Lounge was something I liked but hardly loved. So I wish that there was something in this lineup, at least, that I had already seen that was sort of competing for my own attention for Zone of Interest, much less Oscars.
Yeah.
I'll be contrary just to, because that's how I do. But I think Zone of Interest will end up winning, but I wouldn't say a cakewalk. I really do think I do think Society of Snow has a shot. And I know you didn't love it, Chris, but here's why. I'll say personally, I love the movie, so that's maybe why I'm disillusioned, as I am about many things in life, aren't we all? But it's that's on Netflix. And it's a very accessible movie that and it got other nominations outside of Best Foreign Film. People are going to watch it. And I do think that it could catch on like Western Front. It has not yet. That said, it's only been on Netflix for 3 weeks. We have 6 weeks to go. I do think there is a possibility that people watch it, and It is a much more accessible and easy and ultimately more satisfying movie than The Zone of Interest, which is a very, very intellectual exercise, really unpleasant to sit through. And I loved it. It's brilliant, obviously. I mean, it's great, but I think there's a window. That's going to be the movie that is the most watched movie at the end of the day. And I think it stands a shot. I don't think it is going to win, but I don't think it's a cakewalk.
Yeah, I could see that. But the Netflix effect is an interesting thing to bring up because I was also a little surprised that Nimona landed an animated feature. I personally love Nimona, so I was happy about that. But it just had no presence, really, in the precursors. And so it's just showing yet again that, like, having a platform that everybody uses that's super accessible really helps, even though Academy members, like critics, have access to a lot of ways to view movies. But this year, not being as active, you know, as I haven't been, I was reminded of how it felt before I was, like, the film experience, about how hard it was to see some movies and how hard it was to, like, really engage in some of the conversations about movies because they're, you know, at one theater, or they're there for a week, or they're just there for the industry but not really for the public. And I think those things end up kind of bleeding into it a little bit, and I think that's why Netflix has such an advantage on things.
Yeah.
And that might also be, going back to the beginning of our conversation, why Nyad and Rustin were able to get kind of do what Beautiful Boy or Till or some of these other ones that kind of only had shot in that acting categories
right.
Got. I don't want you to choose another movie if society knows your answer to this, Eric, but I think we also saw a similar thing happen with Coda winning Best Picture because it was on streaming and more people watched it over the time frame between nominations and voting. In either the above or below the line categories, is there any movie that you think could pull off a surprise win because it's available on streaming or it might be more readily watched?
Yes, I'm going to do a hot take here. I think that there's a surprise shot that Sandra Hüller might win Best Actress. I do. It's not likely, but I do feel that obviously the front runners being Emma and Lily, right? But I do see a world where those kind of split in some ways. And obviously, Anatomy of Fall is a very popular film for Academy voters across many departments. And people who haven't seen it will see it. And it's just such a grand, big performance that's also, it's much more exciting than Lily Gladstone's performance and less outré than Emma Stone's. So I could see, and where they're going to maybe want to give that movie something, maybe. In the end, again, not likely, just like Scotty is known, not likely, but I could see a way where there's a path for her to clear and be sort of like, if you remember, like Marion Cotillard that year was like not expected to win. And I think she like found a path. Do you know, people really saw it and was like, oh, wow, she's great.
Yeah, I mean, if that happened more often, the Oscars would also be more exciting, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I still, like, there was a lot of hullabaloo about this at the time many, many years ago now. But when Amelie lost the Oscar, that was specifically because at the time, I mean, the rules have changed since, but at the time you could not vote in that category unless you had seen all of the nominees. So I have often fantasized about what would happen in each category if they required everyone to see all five nominees. It's not a big ask, especially because they vote for so few movies across the board. So it's not really that big of an ask, you know.
Yeah, you see Poor Things, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Oppenheimer, and you're three-fifths of the way there for most categories.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the only person that I think that movie only stands to further gain, I guess, is what I'm saying, Anatomy of a Fall. It's like, and it is a movie that if people watch it, I don't know anybody who's been like, eh, it was okay.
Yeah, it's very accessible too. Like, it seems like when you hear about it, you're like, oh, that's going to be like a intellectual exercise the way people describe Zone of Interest, like you just described it, but it's really not. It has like all of this like pulpy, like sort of like, it's not pulpy in its feel, but a pulpy sort of like plot.
Well, and it's courtroom drama.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So everybody loves that. Like, everybody loves a courtroom drama.
Yeah. And the performances across the board, it's not just Sandra Hüller, but the performances across the board in that movie are fantastic.
It's a great, I'm thrilled for how well it did. It's thrilling.
Yeah. I was just going to say, the momentum is really crazy for that movie. You have it getting into director, but I was also really excited and a little surprised to see it get in for film editing. I do think that there is a real positive momentum shaping up either in actress, or I think it could even challenge the holdovers in original screenplay. I think there's a pretty good shot that Anatomy of a Fall walks away with something. And kind of on the Gloria Graham point that you were making, Nathaniel, if voters are trying to catch up on their movies, just starting with Best Picture, and they watch Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest, you have this compelling case that Sandra Hüller is one of the performers of the year.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, but she would still have to get around. I know a lot of people are rooting for Lily, but you would still have to get around how sensational Emma Stone is in Poor Things. I think it's her best performance easily, and she was already giving lots of great performances. So it's kind of, to me, I was shocked watching it because I already thought she was capable of like these, like, you know, big, incredibly inventive and fun performances, and then she just topped all of her own best work. So like, that would be the challenge.
Agreed. And there's kind of that, obviously they love Poor Things, right? And where else are they going to award that movie?
Yeah.
I think they love Poor Things more than they do Killers of the Flower Moon, but maybe that's my own bias. But and of course there's the does Emma Stone deserve the second is, I guess, part of it. But I do think that we as like pundits, critics, people think about that more than voters do. I really do. I think we always imprint that upon, but nobody had a problem giving Frances McDormand number three. It went very fast. And I think Cate Blanchett lost last year wrongly for other reasons. So I think it wasn't like she doesn't deserve number three. That was in there. But, you know, so I think with Emma, that's like, I don't know. I'm rooting for her as well. And I really hope she wins and the Poor Things doesn't walk away empty handed. But I do think Sandra Hüller has a shot, which I never would have kind of thought maybe when I saw it, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, but I mean, the reason you bring up for the shot is very compelling, and I will have to think about it. And it's like, yeah, I remember when Tony Erdmann came out and people were, you know, excited about that movie and excited about her. And I was kind of like, it was a good movie. It was way too long for me. And so it's like nice to come around to her gifts finally, because she really like had such a great year.
Can I ask, I have a question for you, which will help us move to another category, the best actor category. But I was so thrilled for Colman Domingo because I love Colman Domingo and he's a great actor and he's finally coming into his moment. It's thrilling. I'm so happy he's nominated. That said, I still am not convinced he's maybe good in that movie. I just want to get your opinion. I'm honestly wrestling with it. Like when I watched it, I was totally swept up in it, and you know, it was a joy to watch him because I love him. And then after, I was like, maybe his acting had like quotation marks around it the whole time in a way that is weird. It felt very performative in a way that wasn't supported by the filmmakers, in a way that made it feel meaningful. Does that make sense? And I could be wrong. This is like, you know, every once in a while you're looking at something, you're like, I really don't know how I feel about it.
I would say in this case that that you would not have that response if the movie were good. Because like, I think the performative nature and the quotes and all, I think that's all true. But I think the character, he was always so famously like out there that I think it's a really smart performance, but I don't think the movie is helping at all to frame what he's doing. Because it's like sort of very generically constructed and conveyed. And he's like running circles around the movie, I think is the problem. I think if you had had something really strong in terms of filmmaking around it, like people would be talking about him for a win.
And I think one of the challenges, sorry, Chris, I'll let you talk in a sec, is just that, and a friend pointed this out to me, is like, there are no other characters in Rustin. He has nothing to play against. Like, nothing plays out. There's like the boyfriend who looks like Finn Wittrock who doesn't factor. There's so many characters like introduced, but he doesn't have a relationship with another actor through the whole movie. So it's hard to sort of judge kind of his acting because he's just like out there on his own.
I feel like there was a kernel of something interesting that if the movie were better structured, it could explore more, which is I like when we got a little more interiority into Rustin's home life and specifically like him kind of juggling his boyfriend and some of the other people that he's seeing. And I think if you almost contrast his interiority with how broad he is, you know, in his scenes with like Chris Rock or railing against the establishment or the NAACPA, I think it makes it come together more as a character and rather than a performance. But it was sort of funny hearing your sort of analysis of his performance, Eric, because I kept thinking most of these things you could also say to describe Bradley Cooper in Maestro.
Yeah, no, I could see that too, but I love both of those performances, actually.
And if you told me 2 months ago that anybody other than Bradley Cooper was going to win that Oscar, I would have told you you're out of your mind. And it's weird that there's such a turnaround on that. I think there's like a shot that he's in the race, but it seems unlikely. It feels like the moment has passed for him with that.
I chalk this up to, I realize the Oscars are not a monolith. We talk about them like they're a monolith, like, well, the Oscars feel this way. And I realize that's not the case at all, but it's just so easy to talk about it that way. But as a monolith, they are very resistant to movie star men who are like movie star attractive, and they make them wait until they're old. They just do. They have forever. I mean, like the exception might be Leonardo DiCaprio, but even he, like, was, like, you know, like we say about deglam for actresses, which is thankfully kind of over. Like, they're not obsessed with that anymore. Thank God. But that kind of happened with Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant. So it's just, like, they need you to be past that point in your career. And Bradley Cooper is quickly getting there because he's not playing up his movie star qualities so much anymore. But anyway. That is a weird thing to me that people are resistant to him. And it reminds me a little bit of how they reacted to Barbie. Like, yes, we love it, but we don't want to award Margot Robbie for it. So like people's resistance to awarding Maestro, like Bradley Cooper is doing too much. It's almost like the Barbara Streisand thing, right? It's like people turning on the vanity of a movie star who thinks they can do anything.
Yeah, that's in there for Maestro for sure. In the discourse.
Which is weird to me because he has proven that he has all these gifts. It's not like, you know, there are some actors who try their hand at directing and are not good at it. He is not one of those actors.
Right.
So it's just like a strange.
This is unrelated, but maybe. I just want to co-sign what you said about Bradley Cooper's Barbara Streisand because I've been listening to the audiobook and all I can, like, me and my partner have said countless times, Bradley is just giving us his Barbara as Maestro.
I mean, I loved Maestro, and like, I know I need to do a thing with Claudio on the site because he hates it, but I loved it. Like, I had such a good time watching it. It could be because I'm very into Leonard Bernstein, and you know, if you have really connection to something, you know, you tend to react better to it. But I thought it was great. The internet definitely hates it.
I mean, there's so much ambition in the movie, and I thought it had great high highs for sure.
Yeah.
Like, high highs, and enough high highs to end up liking it. I think it has some flaws, but I think it's, I mean, Bradley Cooper's talented, people. He is not just beautiful.
Right.
And, you know, I've worked with him. He's also like the kindest, warmest, nicest human. I think he's very well loved in that community, actually. I think it's that like film Twitter and like blah, like have seeped some kind of malaise into the maestro discourse. And it's a little, that movie's a little highfalutin, as we'd say in Pittsburgh. And so I think, you know, I think it's that too. It's not just that, but it's like the subject matter is very, you know, classical music, and it's doesn't help him in the race this year. But I still think he's in it. I think it's still between him and Giamatti and Murphy, but it would be a surprise at this point. But actors love him.
That's good to know, because like I want him to win an Oscar. He's been nominated in 5 categories and he's yet to win.
I mean, Chris, wouldn't you say like already in this town of LA, wouldn't, I mean, I feel Bradley Cooper's deeply beloved and respected.
He's beloved and respected, but I weirdly feel like he is getting painted with the same Anne Hathaway coat of wanted too much, which again, is a completely dumbfounded argument. I mean, it kind of goes back to what we were saying around Barbie. You know, they don't want to see you sweat, even though you're absolutely sweating and wanting this all along, but you can't show it.
What's wrong with wanting it? You give an award and you tell everybody in the industry, this is the highest thing. Why wouldn't you want it?
Yeah.
What's wrong with saying I want it?
I think that the what we're talking about with Margot Robbie and with Bradley Cooper, and even also extends to Greta Gerwig.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's still waiting on an Oscar, and she just like keeps having these like huge accomplishments. And so I think there's also a little bit, maybe a little bit of resentment, even if the people are well-liked.
Yeah,
if they're that talented in so many different ways, you know.
Or you can kick the can and just say they'll get it next time, and then 20 years from now they're having to swim from Cuba to Florida in extensive prosthetic makeup just to get a nomination.
Although, just quickly, and we can move on, but just while you're in the pool with Annette for a second, can we just thank those ladies for just having faces and not screwing up their faces? Just have a face, ladies. They look beautiful in the movie. Just have a face.
Yeah, and like when we were talking about Jodie Foster being back earlier, also, she, you know, the timing's really good, too, because also True Detective just started. And she's so much fun to watch on that. And it just, like, to your point, Eric, it's just so nice to have her back. And it was very frustrating to me not to... I hate it when actors retire. And I know it's selfish of me, but if somebody's really great at it, it's, like, my favorite art form. And I'm like, don't leave us.
I do feel in classic Oscar style, though, Monolith, that they once again managed to take a Best Supporting Actor category that could have been really interesting and dynamic and made it pretty boring.
Oh, Best Supporting Actor.
Actor, yeah.
That a tear for Charles Melton.
Tons of tears for Charles Melton. And for me, a tear for Defoe, who I love. I think he should have an Oscar by now. And theoretically, if things hadn't netted out as they had, right? You had, like, Downey Jr., who has an argument for, like, been around a long time, great actor, theoretically, forgetting the last 10 years. But you have, like, Defoe, great actor for 40 years, nominations across 40 years, and you have Mark Ruffalo, 4 nominations, character actor, everybody loves him. That's, like, exciting, right? And it just kind of, now there's kind of no race. It's just a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer, especially because Ryan Gosling's right there and he's so much better than everybody else. Just like give him his Oscar now. Don't make him wait for it.
So much better.
But also this category, as you guys know, is my least favorite always. And it's not because I don't like supporting actors. I'm like a huge fan of character actors. It's just like there's something about the way the acting branch in Hollywood feels about men in particular that makes this category boring every year. I don't know. Like, they never go in weird directions. Sometimes you'll get like an exciting, you know, unexpected nominee and like supporting actress or lead actor even, or, but it's just like this category, they always go with like sort of like dull stuff. Like, they default to dull. I don't know why. Like, they had lots of interesting choices this year, but they would have had to watch more movies also, or think about the movies in a different way. Like, for instance, they were watching Anatomy of a Fall and loving it. And I'm sorry, but Milo Machado Grainer, who plays the blind son, is better than some of the nominees they came up with, as is Swan Arlode, who plays her lawyer friend. You know, so it's like even in the very limited pool of movies they watched, they could have made more exciting choices.
It's not a bright town out here, Nathaniel. I don't know what to tell you.
It's not a what?
It's not a bright town out here in LA.
But even if they treated it more like they look at the actress categories, where sometimes stardom does it for you, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like a sex appeal or like some sort of like, you know, like where you get the town excited. Like, it would have been, if this was in supporting actress category, like Paul Mescal would have had a shot, for example.
Yeah.
Or like Jacob Elordi. Like, I'm not saying that I thought Jacob Elordi was deserving. I'm just saying it would have, or Charles Melton is like a much better example, I guess. But it just seems like they just don't, it seems like a category they don't think about at all. Compared to the
right, and they will crown that actress a la like Amanda Seyfried for Mank, right? Where it's like that performance is like what, but she's like pretty. They want her at the event. She's a good actress, and you know, it's kind of like, oh, we'll christen her now. Where you don't have that sensibility for the men, for sure.
For sure.
I do.
In a way, though, it almost feels like they're kind of doing that for Robert Downey Jr. And maybe this is just like my own personal taste of I don't think this is the most adventurous category, but to me, he's sort of my weakest of the five, and has sort of been on the weaker end of some of the performances in contention. I would have loved to see Charles Melton, but I am happy that the industry watched American Fiction, a movie I really loved when I first saw, and I've been kind of coming down off the initial high over the past couple months, but Sterling K. Brown's performance has really stayed with me even more than Jeffrey Wright's has. And I felt like it was a really interesting performance to single out. And I'm happy he's there, even though I wish it wasn't at expense of Charles Melton or some other people.
We probably shouldn't get into this as like our final note, but like Eric and I are not fans of that performance. We were talking about this offline, which is frustrating.
I love him. I love
Sterling. No, that's why it's frustrating for me. He's such a good actor.
But I thought the performance was like, we talked about this in our discussion, Chris, but I felt like it was unspecific and not strong. But this is why maybe we're not meant to spend our lives together, like I thought at the beginning of the call.
There's been a real three-act structure to this this call.
There was an arc. I do want to say, if I can say, and I wrote this in the what will be in the text on the site tomorrow, I personally think that the Best Picture lineup is the greatest lineup for Best Picture we have maybe ever had ever in 96 years, or certainly in the top five. I think that those 10 films, there's not a dog among them. There's three pictures directed by women that aren't there for, they like deserve to be there. They're not there for that placement. There's three like not in the English language fully. And it's, those are huge triumphs, I think. That kind of show, you know, how the industry has changed and that people are open to the way the industry's changed and excited about it. I don't think there's I think Killers of the Flower Moon is probably my least favorite of those 10, and it's still a very well-made movie, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, and Past Lives made it, you guys. I mean, tiny little movie got those two Oscar nominations. Like, people who saw it were moved by it and loved it, and it's so thrilling that that's in the Best Picture lineup. that's like, there are major things to celebrate. I think particularly that category is a knockout.
I think it's a knockout too. And I don't even like Killers of the Flower Moon, but like, I recognize its ambition and what you're saying, it's well made and all that. I mean, if I could replace that one, I know that would horrify a lot of people. That's what I would do. But even the movies like Killers of the Flower Moon and American Fiction are my two least favorite from the lineup. But even both of those, I like respect them and I get what they're going for. And I think they have great moments. So yeah, it's definitely a strong Best Picture lineup. And my two favorites of the year are in it. So when that happens, you can't complain that much.
Absolutely.
How often does that happen? I mean, I always never, as an Oscar lover and like a kid, when you're falling in love with cinema, right? Best Picture was always the category that I cared the least about because it was never the Best Picture of the year. I think in the 40 years that I've been following this, probably three times maybe Best Picture was my personal Best Picture because it used to have to come to consensus on.
Yeah.
Ends up being a compromise choice, in my opinion, most times. And every once in a while, you get a Nomadland or a No Country for Old Men or something like that. That's like, oh, wow, that really, like, people got how good that was. But it's, you know, usually it's like, you know, it's something that's like, okay, or bad, you know, so it's
or like prestigious and ambitious. You know,
right, or like bad, it's like Coda or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it's
I love how it's like a year later or two years.
I will
not
let it go. I will,
it's 2 years later, actually.
So, but you know, I'm just saying, usually it's
free Coda everywhere all at once.
But it was, this is really the first time I'm actually excited about that category, even though it's kind of a foregone conclusion, I guess, on some level. But Oppenheimer would not be second or third choice, but you know, it's a good movie, obviously. It's good.
You know, yeah, that's what I was going to say about Oppenheimer. If something has to sweep, and I'm against sweeps in general, and I actually wanted to talk about this in the beginning, because I feel like sweeps are coming back. There was a few years where they weren't the thing. And I was so relieved because I think they're the most boring thing on earth. And I think I also think they're anti-art because like art has all these like interesting curlicues and flourishes in different directions it can be thought of as. So I hate sweeps, but I think in this, it's really coming back. Like the Emmys, like three shows won literally everything. And it makes me sad, actually, but I think if it has to happen, I'm glad it's a movie that's really easy to respect. Like, I don't love Oppenheimer, but like, you all know my feelings about like long movies, and I'm always like dreading sitting through 3 hours of something. But it flies by for what it is, and it's just really well made. So it's like, if something has to sweep, I'm okay with it if it's so easy to respect and has lots of highs. You know, like what you were saying earlier, Eric, when the highs are very high, you can forgive lots of other things.
And even just like, it's an interesting bunch of movies to talk about. I'm like less high on the, not less high on the lineup, but less high on like the movies as maybe you guys are. Like I have complicated feelings about Poor Things and even Past Lives and Maestro. But they're all movies that I have thoughts about and that I'm like interested to talk about. And I do think that this crop of 10 does paint a pretty accurate portrait of the year in cinema, which is really like at the end of the day, what you should want about from a Best Picture lineup that we're taking from different piles and different sectors of the industry to form kind of a yearbook.
And different voices, right? I mean, like several international directors and, you know, that's exciting. That was, the race has not been like that in the past. So those, like, I think not only is it like representative of like the year, but I think it's kind of representative of the industry. We have little movies, we have huge movies, we have, you know, it's tonally, they're very different. And I don't know, I have to look for, you know, some happiness in here. And that is,
well, and also like what you're saying about like the range of stuff, there's actually four comedies in this list, which is very unusual. With American Fiction, Holdovers, Barbie, and Poor Things. That is really unusual for a Best Picture lineup.
Indeed. So, yeah,
it's exciting.
It's exciting. It is exciting. And like I said, like all the performances that we talked about that like I would have replaced another actor with their nomination, they're good actors. Like nobody's that actor so that's exciting. That's what like this is like, you know, the post day trauma of like getting over the things that you're sad missed, right? Is like you get to that place where you're like, okay, wouldn't have been my choice, but like they're talented. They should be in the club, you know? It's nice. Yes.
And then people forget which movie they were nominated for, which is okay in those cases. Like, they'll attribute it to something that was much better later on. They're like, oh, of course they're an Oscar nominee.
Speaking of it as a club, there's 10, at least in acting, 10 new people who have not been nominated before in acting categories. So we're not just defaulting to the same names that we've heard a bajillion times. And like the ones that we are returning to are the Jodie Fosters that haven't been around for a while.
So you're trying to tell me that I should be happy that Leonardo DiCaprio wasn't nominated, which I am. So thanks for the reminder. All right, guys, it was wonderful to talk to you. And once again, this is Nathaniel, your absent host from the Film Experience. Thanks for listening.